Hi, and welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm delighted to have with me Nick Workman from UK rock band Vega. And the band will be releasing their eighth album on September the 8th of this year. Is that right, Nick?
It is. Yep, absolutely.
And it's coming in it's coming in a double vinyl, red vinyl edition as well, you'll be able to pre-order now. Now, the band were formed in 2009, and if you're into melodic rock and you think that that kind of music is actually always seems to originate from Sweden nowadays, this is great.
Where I'm living.
Which is actually where Nick is. This is a UK Midlands-based band, from where I originally was from. So if you're a fan of Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, Muse, Shinedown, and you're going to love this band. Yeah. And I've been streaming the new album for the last few days and absolutely love it.
Awesome.
So, Nick, welcome. And before I dive into the new album, the band formed in 2009. Can you just give us a little bit of background of how that came about, how you found each other?
Essentially, it started when Tom and James approached me. They knew me from my previous band, Kick, and they were a fan of that. And they've been writing songs for Frontiers, our label, for a couple of years. And Frontiers had given them the go-ahead to do what was going to be a project.
Yeah.
So they said, look, would you fancy singing for it? And I was like, I didn't really know who they were that much. I said, oh, well, send me your demos, whatever. You know, send me some music and I'll have a look at it. And when they said to me, I thought, oh, that I quite like that. That sounds pretty good. And I think the first two songs we wrote were a song called Into the Wild and the other one, Kiss of Life. And at that point, we just said, you know what? This is more than a project. This is a band, because I hate projects. I think they just saturate the market and just dilute it down. So I was never really a big fan of doing projects. So then it was a case of, fantastic, this is what we want to do. And like, yeah, we want to play live. And because that was, I never got into a band to sit in a studio or in my bedroom recording. As much as I love this recording process, I wanted to be on that stage. I'm a singer, for God's sake. I'm a show off, you know? So it was, let's do gigs. So, and that's how it blossomed from there. And I think over the years, each album, we've always wanted to make, not necessarily changes, but we just wanted to evolve. We didn't want to just keep, because, you know, as a musician, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, in terms of doing the same thing over and over. Oh, I'm a fan, you know, Def Leppard get it all the time. Why can't they keep doing Hysteria over and over again? And then the moment they do something different, you can't win. You do Hysteria all the time, oh, they're just repeating themselves. You do something different, oh, I just want to hear Hysteria. It's the same for all bands. So we always try to make just incremental changes that feel natural. We don't try to change. It's just what happens. And I think that's one of the biggest things about the band, is that we always try to add new flavors all the time.
So when you all met, you obviously all the kind of music that you started with, I read that in the first album, you basically almost wrote it within 24 hours. I mean, really quickly.
Well, I wouldn't say the album was done in 24 hours, but it generally, each song only took 24 hours. Yeah. Back in those days, the twins didn't have wives and kids. and they even shared a bed together in the house with their mum. So when I was in bed at a normal time, sleeping in night, that's when they were like, "Whoa!" And that's when they were doing that, and that's when they would write the music. And I would always wake up in the morning, and there would be a new backing track in my email, and I would work on it through the day and record it as a demo in the day. While they were asleep, and when there would be about a 3 or 4 hour window where we were all awake, and we loved that song, and it was really good in that respect. So each song generally was like, yep, fine, bosh, done. You know, they didn't all make the album, but essentially each song was written over a 24-hour period.
And you were all kind of into the same kind of music. You had the same kind of influences,
Oh, good. Absolutely. But what was nice, other than the fact that we had this area where we all loved the same stuff, the twins had this area where they really had a lot of pop influences. And I had this area where I was into a lot more sort of heavier stuff. And so that kind of added the different components to make Vega Vega.
And because you're in Sweden at the moment. I mean,
that's where I live.
That's where you live. So, I mean, because for fans of melodic rock or AOR and all that kind of stuff, Sweden has been like almost like people think about the UK blues explosion and how the UK took over the world with rock music, and then in the 80s it all flooded back from America and we had all that you know, the hair metal and stuff. But I would say the last decade or so, it's all come out of Sweden. This kind of music, it's all coming out of that area. Is that why you're there? Do you feel at home there? Do you think this is my place?
Well, I just make sure I drink three glasses of Swedish water every day, and I write a cracking song every day. No, I'm here because my wife is Swedish. And we flipped a coin, and it was like we're going to live in Sweden. No, it was just how circumstances are, and we've literally just a week today we moved into this house where we are today. And it's great because it's on the west coast, so it's 10 minutes from the beach, and it's where Per Gessler from Roxette lives. He was one of those crossover bands that we always loved. I remember us all just sitting around in the studio, and we're just like, we'd pop on Roxette and stuff like that because it had that rock element, but it was melodicness. And obviously Swedish, you know.
Yeah, so of course.
But I think they've always been there. There's, you know, bands like Europe, a cracking. There's a few unknown bands that maybe just weren't massive that are great. But essentially, yeah, I think it's a bit of a, hub here because I think they take it very seriously. So there's no, you know, there's a lot of musicians that get by on being average players, and it's quirky, it's their music. Whereas here, everybody's technically like a wizard. and that's not just from playing, but from learning the trade in terms of production and that kind of thing. So it's the whole shebang, you know, I think really. But, you know, I think us Brits, we've got a few cracking bands that are coming through as well. And so it's just that I think over here as well, Spotify obviously started over here. It's a bit of a swear word, I know. But that seems to be the way people listen. In England, I'm glad to say that we're more into product than the streaming.
Yeah, because it's a double-edged thing, isn't it? I mean, streaming, you crossed over a million listens, but you know, and people, and it's a great statistic, but of course it doesn't pay the musicians. It's not enough to keep you put food on the table.
As a musician, you get bearing in mind, you've got to give your splits to between the songwriters and the record label, and for every play on Spotify, I think I would earn, well, I would have this, we earn 0.005 pence per play. And then if you take that 0.0005 pence and think, right, well, that's your bit, that's the label's bit, that's your bit, I could buy a pint of milk after about 2 million plays of one song or something like that. It's ridiculous.
So, I mean, the way I see, and a lot of all of my subscribers and listeners are people that buy physical music. It's why I kind of set this up. And so I see Spotify and the like as a place to discover new music, to listen. And then if I like it, to buy it. And usually more likely now to buy it directly from the band, not even going via Amazon or anything.
The streaming stuff is very convenient, and I don't have a problem with it as a source of music. What I have a problem with is how it's paid out. And you've got all these writer strikes and actor strikes at the moment around streaming services and how people are paid and et cetera. And I put a post on Facebook a couple of weeks ago about that. Is that when's this going to happen for musicians? Because something's going to have to change on that front because it's not sustainable. If that is what is going to happen, people can't survive on that. And that's why a lot of bands these days, you remember the day where bands would record sometimes two albums a year or at least one a year. But these days, it's like, no, we've got a gig because that's the only way we make money. And it's the same for us. The only way we make money is we do really well on merch and stuff, you know. So that's just how it is, unfortunately.
Yeah, because as you say, though, back in the glory days of the 70s, bands would be doing two albums a year. Obviously, and you were seen as being a rock star because the money kept piling in from the album sales. But now you release an album and you're probably going to tour that for 2 years before you even think of making another one because you you've got to recoup those costs, et cetera, from merch, et cetera, everything else.
And here's the other irony in terms of that. Yeah, back in those days, it's like record sales. Now people regard success of how many followers have you got on Facebook? How many followers or views have you got on YouTube? And it's a bit all backwards, you know, it really is. It's a bit frustrating, but unfortunately, it's just the way of the world. You know, there's no way around it.
Well, yeah, and they're just numbers, and those can be gamed, can't they? I totally agree with you. The other thing we were talking just before we went live is that rock music is incredibly popular. It's never gone away. In fact, there are more people, you know, like me talking about it. There are Facebook pages, people reminiscing about, you know, various bands. And of course, if I ever doing an interview like this, people will say, Phil, what are they like? So I'll mention they're like Def Leppard, like Bon Jovi, whatever. And people will then decide without hearing you, I think I know what you're like. But all they'll think, music isn't as good as it used to be. You know, I grew up through the golden age, but actually, and then no one's playing good rock music anymore because they'll just look what's in the charts. But rock is alive and well with lots of bands, many coming out of Sweden, as I said, but with yourselves, is that like a frustration as well when you think there's all these people who are still, all the magazines will think, we're going to do a cover story on Led Zeppelin 2 again.
I've spat off this before, because if you look at, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but if you look at all the bands play in the arenas and what have you, it's like Jurassic Park, you know, and the only way they're putting bums on seats these days, and this is the promoters, is they'll have three big bands touring together so that they can guarantee bums on seats. But when all these people have snuffed it or retired, who's going to fill the arenas? There doesn't seem to be much forward thinking there. And this isn't just about Vega getting a shot. It's about any band that's sort of like up and coming. And I go to bands like Def Leppard and Motley Crue at Wembley Stadium and other gigs. And you see 40, 50,000 people and you think, geez, we can struggle to sell a couple of hundred tickets on a gig. But there's people out there who would love what we do. But they either don't know of us or don't have access to us for whatever reason. Or this is another theory of mine, the toilets at the kind of venues we play are so disgusting that people don't want to step foot in there. Let's face it, rock fans at the moment, there are young rock fans, but for the kind of music that we do, which maybe it would be fair to say is 80s inspired, our fans are of an age and we don't want to be wading through other people's piss. And you don't want to have, you know, if you know, people don't want to have to hover above the toilet seat or just feel like, oh my, I need a tetanus shot from here. And so I just think, unfortunately, there's venues that, if the venues maybe were a little bit better, and this isn't all of them because there's some cracking venues out there, but I think we all get a bit precious about where we want to go and see gigs. It's parking, and you know, we're all grumpy old men or old women.
You raise a really good point, because I recently spoke to Greg Hart from the band Cats in Space. And they had decided to do is, because they said their fans, they got all these fans, as you said, of a certain age who love their music and always talking about them, but then when they played anywhere, they didn't go. And they said people obviously don't feel good about going to a gig if they don't feel they've left their car in a safe place or they're going to stick to the floor. So this year they've decided to take a real gamble and go into a theatre tour. And it's judging from what I've seen, I'm going to see them myself, it's going really well because their fan base now are happy going to a theatre.
Yeah, and Pete, drummer in Vega, he helps them on the tours, and he's been saying that they've been getting good numbers in there. And that sticks with what I'm saying, is the fact that, you know, it's if the venues are a little bit, there was a 30 Seconds to Mars documentary a number of years ago that was talking about their battle with their current, their then label whilst they're recording This Is War album, which is a fantastic album. They've been shit since then, but that album was brilliant. And the guy that took over, I think, Virgin Records or whichever label it was, he wasn't really in the music industry. He was this big business guy. And he had bought all of the service stations along this one massive, massive stretch of road in America.
Yeah.
And he quadrupled the value of the business overnight by doing one simple thing. He sorted out the toilets. Literally, that's what they said. He just went in and got people to go in and revamp and make nice toilet facilities or bathroom facilities.
Yeah.
And that quadrupled the value and the people going in there, spending and staying there because it was nice, you know.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you go out of these like venues and you feel like you have to wipe your feet on the way out, not on the way in, you know.
Yeah. So there you go. You see, the future of rock and roll is based on good toilets. Yeah. Toilets.
Yeah. Everyone wants, you know, it's just that's it. It's simple.
I mean, so Nick, who are your main vocal influences?
I've got a few for different reasons. I think from a vocal perspective, Ray Gillen from Badlands, he did Black Sabbath as well.
Brilliant.
He was just amazing. He's such a massive loss. And
yeah,
it's not
totally.
It's not like I necessarily sound like Ray Gillen, but he had this vibrato and his range. It was just, he had this swagger about him. He was just
I totally agree.
Awesome. But then I have got the things like your John Bon Jovi's and definitely Joe Elliott-isms that I have in there. And I think I get being compared to James LaBrie from Dream Theater every other album review. And because I've got that kind of Bruce Dickinson, Jeff Tate, James LaBrie
kind of
vibrato,
heavier,
I guess.
Heavier music.
But,
yeah.
You know, but I like doing the low sort of like Joe Elliott-isms as well, you know, because he's pretty, everyone knows how much of a Leopard fan and Joe Elliott fan I am. So I can't get away from that one.
Brilliant. And you've done some along the way. You've also had some collaborations as well, haven't you, with people like Jolyn Turner and Danny Vaughan from Ty Cattle?
Tom and James wrote some songs for them
pre-Vega.
Yeah, I've known Danny for years because in my previous band Kick we supported Vaughan, and then Danny and I did this Queen thing in Spain a few years ago as well. So we've stayed really close friends throughout. So yeah, we've got songs that have appeared on different people's albums. I just lose track of what they are.
Well, the new album Battle Lines. I mean, as I say, I've been listening to it a lot, and I read in the press release I got sent about the fact that you were up for a challenge with this one. What do you mean by that? Because this is album number 8.
It is. Yeah. Well, Tom and James, who started the band with me back in 2009, they left the band last year, and it was literally. No, there is no fisticuffs or anything like that. It is when we formed this band, and this is another reason why it's hard for some bands, because we're all of an age where, you know, we've got bills to pay, mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if you're in your 20s, early 30s, maybe you're still living at home, you can go on tour for months alone and not have that problem. And it just got to the point where they had their own business outside of Vega that was paying the bills, as it were. Because in a band, as you know, you can't just take money out every month. Normally, it'd be a case of, right, you get through it because you have to invest in merchandise, you have to pay for hotels, and you get money maybe at certain periods throughout the year when it's there, but you can't guarantee it every week or every month.
Exactly, and
it got to the point where things were becoming less enjoyable for them because their business relies on, they still have business costs, but they couldn't be there to run the business because the gigs happen to be all over weekends mainly.
Yeah.
And it was becoming a source of frustration for them not being able to pay the bill. So they left. And there's a lot of people, how can you carry Vega on without the Tom and James? And I was like, well, hold on a minute. I wrote every single song with Tom and Jim at Vega. You know, it was, so I have every right to play these songs myself as well. And people have every right not to listen to it. It's entirely up to them, you know? So, but Billy, Marcus and Pete, you know, well, Marcus had been in the band since 2010. So then, and Billy and Pete joined in 2020, I think it was, maybe something like that. So they've all been Vega long enough to sort of have, you know, an input into the back catalogue as well. So it was more a case of, right, let's deliver an album. And it wasn't so much as we're going to do this for against you or you people who said we shouldn't. It was more about the fact to ourselves, like, let's just do this and make the best album ever that this band has done. And that's not being disrespectful to the past, but what is the point in going to try and write the second best album ever? You know, if you're going to go in for it, go for it. And everyone's going to have different opinions about what your favorite album is of Vega or whichever band is you like. So we can only do what we love. And as with all Vega albums, we don't stop recording or writing until we feel like we have got the 10 or 11 best songs we've ever done. And so that was all it was, really. It's just a case of, it's a new songwriting partnerships. You know, Tom and James, who've had a hand in every song with me along the way, weren't there anymore. So a lot of people would be there going, okay, let's see then. Let's see what you can do without them. And I think from the feedback I've been getting, you know, it's been like, well, looks like you're okay then. So it was definitely nothing to do with like the challenge against Tom and James. It was more about a challenge to ourselves to maybe just settle the calm the waves maybe of discontent amongst certain people.
I mean, was the songwriting process any different? I mean, one of the
Because with Tom and James over the years, as I said, they would send me a backing track, and because they were in York and I was in the Midlands, we were 3-4 hours apart. So it was a case of if there was any changes, it was like, oh yeah, it's just not so easy to do. Whereas with Pete, we live 35 minutes away from each other. So, So he would basically come up with some musical ideas. I would come up with my ideas and I would just say, right, I'll be there in half an hour, mate. You know, and we go and we work on stuff. And with this album, we didn't just, quite often with Tom and James and I, if a song just wasn't quite hitting the mark, we'd be busy on to the next song because we'd always had this constant flow of ideas. But whereas with this one, we thought, you know what? That verse is, or like with the song Love to Hate You, we had this version of the song. We thought, oh, I don't know, the chorus just wasn't working. The verse is amazing. It's got everything going on. It's just probably the most important part of the song, the chorus, wasn't working. So instead of just ditching the song and moving on, we said, right, let's just work on it. And it got to the point we came up with about 2 or 3 different ideas for that particular chorus. And Pete said, actually, I've got a musical idea on a different song. I think that would work. And then I said, yeah, I had a chorus for it, but he also had a chorus for it. And I said, hold on a minute, let's start the chorus with yours and finish it with mine. And it was just so, and that was how it worked. So we were able to fix things in the studio because we didn't have demos. We basically recorded the album in the studio as we went, and then people would go in and replace guitar parts. And so it was essentially the album is the demo, but we just kept cutting bits out, replacing it and chopping it. So it was, I've never had so much fun recording an album. And Pete said the same thing because we had such a productive time. He sent me this, I was on the way to his I don't know which song it was to record, but he sent me the backing track to what was become Not Enough.
Yeah.
And I literally listened to that backing track on the 35-minute drive to Pete's house and came up with the melody for the whole song straight away that hasn't changed. But I didn't have any lyrics, but I got into the studio. I said, Pete, don't say anything. Just bring that backing track up now. I just need to sing something. And it was terrible because I keep saying this story to people, but my wife had heard what I'd been coming up with, but because I didn't have any lyrics, all I could be going was, I would just sing like this, you know. And so I just recorded this demo of me just singing, just not even words.
Yeah.
And that's all she can hear now when she hears that song. It's terrible. But literally that's how it was. I just put in this like melody. It's like, oh man, that's great. So we ended up working on that song. And then the next one after it. And that's just the thing. We just had this constant flow. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I love that song. There's a great vocal on that song. But the other one you mentioned, Love to Hate You, is one of my favourites. I've got this. I love the whole album, but there are 3 specific songs that I just absolutely can't stop playing. And Love to Hate You is one of them. It's one of those... it's one of those tracks that takes me back to when I was younger, and you would always pick like handpick a few tracks that would get me ready to go out on a Friday night.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of feel. It's really anthemic and it's very positive. In fact, the whole album is a very uplifting and positive experience.
Awesome.
Were you aware of that as it came together? It's a very, very, I mean, we live in dark times. It's just perfect.
Yeah, it's kind of, because it's not even that all the lyrics are positive. Most of the lyrics are dealing with circumstances that you're faced with.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
Don't Let Them See You Bleed is essentially about the fact that, like, even though if you're hurting right now because someone's doing something to you, don't give them the satisfaction of seeing that you're down. Don't give them that win, you know. And yeah. It's about the fact that we're not in one big battle. We've got lots of little battles. And if you try and win one big battle, you're screwed. But if you try and pick your little battles that you win, so it's kind of that. I mean, not enough that we just mentioned. That's more. I'm not really I can't write party lyrics to save my life unless I'm just taking the piss. But I don't write politically ones. Mine are real life based lyrics from circumstances that I see or observe. But yeah. Not Enough is essentially a bit of an environmental song. The fact that we're all sort of like, well, if he's not, I'm not. And if she's not, I'm not. Why would I if they won't? In that kind of thing. And until we start doing instead of just talking about it, we're just going to be on a one-way trip to shite. So that's that one there. So, but again, it's, yeah, I always try and keep it positive because I'm most people that meet me say that I'm one of the most optimistic and positive people out there. So, you know, and that just comes through. But, and that's because, and even Embrace the Grey is about that. It's about, you know what? If things are turning to shit, you just have to embrace it and make the most of it. And it may not be as good as you expected, but it's going to be a lot better than zero if you try and make the most of a situation still. You know, if you just wallow in it, that's all you're going to get. But if you try and still make the best of a situation, you know, you're going to get a lot more fun out of it.
Yeah, I love that song, Embrace the Grey. There's that kind of like really groovy bit about 2.5 minutes in it when it kind of drops back. I do my
best Barry White impression.
Yeah.
What are the other two that you liked? So I'd love to
the other
you.
My other two favourites are the last one, which was Gotta Be You. I absolutely love that. And the other one was obviously the title track, Battle Lines.
Cool.
I think it's really obviously mid-paced commercial, wonderful melodies. The other thing, of course, is you mentioned it earlier. There's a lot of pop sensibilities in the tunes.
Yeah.
I think it's so important that when we talk about like the older rock fans or whatever, but for the new generation coming up, they're probably going to come over from a different genre, and probably more than likely they're going to Glastonbury and they're waving their flags to all the, you know, the big choruses that come with today's more popular music. But your songs could easily be, you know, turned on their head to be that kind of thing. They are, at the end of the day, they're songs. They're more than just riffs and stuff. You know, they're wonderful melodies, great eights, choruses. Yeah. Choruses are fantastic.
Yeah, and that's, again, Pete and I just didn't want to settle for anything. You know, we would keep working on something, even if it was just changing a line, a word, a syllable, until we thought that's as good as we could possibly get it, and we're totally happy with that. There's a funny story around the song 33s and 45s.
Yes, another good one.
Yeah, Pete had this melody for the start of the chorus. He goes, I said, okay, yeah, cool. And then, but at the time, he had so many backing. We had so many backing tracks going backwards and forwards. He sent me the song, and I said, Pete, I've been singing that melody over the song. It works, but I don't know. I'm just not feeling it, mate. And he said, well, send it to me. And he called me back. He goes, you dick, you're singing it over the wrong song. I went, there's just so much stuff I just didn't know which one. Okay, now I'm with you. Yeah, that does sound good, you know. But we both, you know, the pop sensibilities are in there, but it's probably still our most hard rocking record, ironically.
It is, but that's what I think. It ticks all the boxes, and I just I hope that lots of people get to hear it that probably, even though this is your eighth album, there's, as you say, there's lots of people who probably went to see Motley Crue and Def Leppard who aren't aware that you're hiding in plain sight.
I mean, there's a few people that discover us on the last album, Anarchy and Unity, and then they've gone, oh my God, now we've got six other albums that we could listen to. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's great that people have that sort of, it's like people who haven't seen Friends. They've got 10 series of if you like that sort of thing, you're so lucky you're going to see this for the first time, or any movie that you think is a classic someone hasn't seen. So yeah, I'd like to think that people will be pleasantly surprised if they do discover us.
And you've got some fantastic videos out there as well for people to dip into. And one of my favorites is How We Live. And I love it because you obviously every so many frames you change your clothes to fit a
specific genre. That's Don't Fool Yourself Again.
Don't Fool Yourself, exactly.
And the funny is, that was, I did that video. We just had the guy set up, Stephen, our photographer and videographer as well, but he just set up his camera in a static thing. And I just told the guys, right, you need to come up with these different, the outtakes are even funnier, but they're just like not appropriate for what we wanted to do. So it was a lot of fun to do that video. Yeah, all the different genres, and then they start to swap, you know, so you've got the grunge people getting all 80s and stuff like that.
Do you think that rock music now in 2023 is actually letting go of a lot of these kind of almost fashion templates of what people perceived a rock band looks like or sounds like? Do you think it's beginning?
Yeah, I think so, because these days you can't take the piss out of anyone, can you, without someone being offended by it. So I think so. That means you can do whatever you want. But 80s fashion is now trendy. It's all gone full circle.
Yeah.
So you can get away with it, and you know, you could turn up in your spandex and be the coolest man in the pub these days. Not that I would, but if you were that way inclined.
Do you think, because obviously when you started, you were, the influences were very apparent and where you were coming from, etc. I mean, that I would say that although they're still there, they're not as there as they were. You've obviously got your own, you're making your own footprints and it's your own sound. Is there a conscious effort to do that? Or do you feel now, especially when you're losing two of the key songwriters, you're now on a totally new and fresh path?
I think so, because obviously losing Tom and Jim meant that the style was going to change anyway. It was going to maintain its vagueness by me being there, because like I said, my melodies are always there. So it was obviously going to always sound like Vega, but Pete and Billy and whoever else was going to bring ideas to the table were obviously going to bring something new. So it was going to sound different without us even trying to sound different. But what I do like, I think, is the fact that a lot of people now, when they hear stuff, say, oh, that sounds like classic Vega, or that's a little bit new. But Vega does have a sound, which is really cool. And I've even seen a few bands out there that they're using things like, this band, they sound a little bit like Bon Jovi, a little bit like Vega, a little bit. So we're starting to get a sound that people are referencing. So yeah, it is good. It is good.
And have you got any tours lined up for when the album comes out?
Yeah. So we're doing a full UK tour. It's our biggest tour yet. But again, taking into account who our audience is, we're kind of doing the Weekend Warrior thing. So we're kind of doing Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday things. So we start on the 28th of September in Grimsby, and then we go through until the middle, towards the end of October, and we're going from we've got Grimsbury, I'm not gonna remember all of them, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Sheffield, Leicester, Cannock, Newport, London, Dover. There's a few places we've never played, whereas Blackpool, there's a few places we haven't played before, but it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Are you also trying to hook up with a support or anything for?
Yeah, so we've got Kim Jennett, and she's got this voice that will rip your face off. So she's got a full band now. So it's going to be a really good 1-2 punch from both bands, because her band seriously rocks as well. And then when we come on, and we're going to be playing songs from the whole back catalogue, from Kiss of Life right through to the new stuff. And we also thought, well, how many new songs can we really put in? Because people still want to hear some of the older stuff as well. So we thought, well, we'll probably be able to get, if we do 16 or 17 songs, we'll probably be able to do 6 or 7 newbies. But what we thought is we'd learn 8 or 9, and then we'll just keep changing it for the gigs.
And then judge on audience reaction, I guess.
And the same with the older stuff. We'll probably learn more than we need to know, and then we'll just, you know, and if we get into a position where we think this set works brilliantly, then we'll stick with it.
And so how important then, well, I suppose that what you, I already know the answer to this, but how important is the physical product, the vinyl album and the CD to the band?
Well, massively, because again, it's not just about that's where the money is. It's just that's what we grew up with. That's what we enjoyed doing. You know, I mean, so it's a double red well, on the vinyl, it's worth saying that, and this is why we're doing what we're doing, there's a bonus track on the vinyl called Too Much Too Soon that is not on any streaming. It's a vinyl exclusive track. Normally you got a CD exclusive track or goes on Spotify. But to try and encourage the buying of actual product, we said, right, we're going to put a song that's not anywhere else on the vinyl. So it's not on the CD either. So that's just, you know, and it kind of worked conveniently for us as well, because the album was too long to go on a single vinyl. Yeah. And to go on a double vinyl, it was a bit, we're going to have a bit of a gap there. You know, I remember at the end of Pyromania, after the end of side one, you had this like, just to try and make up the, we didn't want to hear that crap. So we had this song that we wanted to go on the CD, but we just felt maybe there's too many songs. And it's a great rocking song that Billy and I had written. And so that's exclusive to the vinyl. It won't be anywhere else, just on the vinyl. So it's really massively important, because I grew up loving the album experience. When you listen to an album from track one to the last track, and you read the inlays and the lyrics and the credits list. And I said this to someone yesterday, where if you had cassettes, that new smell of the print and the ink on the cassette, people would be sniffing glue or cocaine. I was sniffing cassette covers. And it's so important, because when you listen to streaming, if I look at the statistics of songs on albums, the first song will get the most listens, and then it will get steadily less until the last song is barely ignored, because people don't listen to albums these days. They just listen to bits and pieces here, then everywhere. So for us, the whole album experience is massively important.
Yeah, totally agree, because then you're immersing yourself in what the artist is trying to put across, and it's a story, the way that you've sequenced the songs. You haven't just thrown them together. You've thought it through. We'll open with this one. Last track, side one, will be this track. First track, side two, will be this. And a lot of thought goes into that.
Absolutely. Whenever we come up with an album running order, there was even when it was just you're looking at a CD before we had vinyls, which we have for the last few albums, we would still think, okay, where would side one end and where would side two begin? And we even do that when we're doing live set lists. Where do we want that sort of like drop down where we'll gradually bring it up again, and then the big finish at the end?
Because as you say, it takes people on a journey. Where would you prefer people to go to buy your merch and your albums?
In all honesty, I really don't mind, because it's none of us are in this. The number one currency for this band is, are we enjoying ourselves? It's fun. You know, we've all got, we all earn our living from music, but outside of Vega as well as Vega. So we're doing different things. So it's whether people buy it from Amazon or from local record shops are really important as well. So it doesn't have to be from the band. It can just be from anywhere, you know, anywhere. Just you know, buying the actual physical product is, you know, you're going to get an extra song if you buy the vinyl, let's face it.
And it's a glorious red color as well.
Yeah, exactly. The last album, Anarchy and Unity, was white. This one is red, and the next one's going to be blue.
Blue, obviously.
Yeah. And it's not for the French flag. Let's just be clear about that. It's not for the French flag.
And for you personally, I mean, when you're on tour, are there certain albums you carry around with you on your phone or on your speaker?
Generally, it's Vega stuff, because I'm terrible at remembering my own lyrics. So, but I copped this one last night. I bet have a, and it's not for vanity's sake. To be honest with you, when we're on tour in the van, we're just chatting and having a really good laugh. So music that's playing is on in the background. You know, it's just background, because we just have a laugh together, just talking shit.
Okay, well, people can find out about the gigs and buy tickets from vegaofficial.co.uk.
Or the Facebook page and Instagram page.
Yeah, cool. Facebook as well. And the album is out on September the 8th. And as you've just heard, there's an exclusive track tagged on the end of side four of the vinyl edition, which is in a glorious red colour with a gatefold sleeve. So that's the one you need to get, everybody.
Even if you haven't got a record player, just buy it anyway. It looks good.
Well, exactly. But no, I'm sure people would. Well, thank you very much, Nick, for all of your time today.
No problem.
That'd be brilliant to talk to you. And please keep me informed about what the band's up to, and I'll do my best to share the information as well. And I really wish you well with the album. And I'll just say again, I absolutely love it. There's some wonderful tracks on here. Very uplifting. Great. You know, so if you look at if you're watching the news too much and you're thinking, Christ, put this album on. It's gonna put you in a good place.
We're just like the Samaritans. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it. Rock music. It's like the Samaritans for the soul. Yeah.
Well, it is. It is. Yeah. That's what it is. I mean, that's the whole point of it. Music is medicine. Absolutely.
It is, isn't it? So take your vitamins, everybody. So thanks, Nick, and I'll talk to you soon. And remember, everybody, please subscribe to the Now Spinning Magazine website, YouTube channel, and podcast. And take care, Nick, and I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Take care. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
So a huge thank you to my guest, Nick Workman from the band Vega. And it's important to support new bands. As I said to you in the interview, with so many magazines will just run, you know, another story about Led Zeppelin 2 or something. But we need to foster and support new rock music. And this is a band releasing their 8th album on September the 8th on wonderful red colored vinyl, gatefold sleeve, with an exclusive track which you will not find on streaming services. And they're a great band. It's a really uplifting album, so go out and support them. Find them on Facebook, find them on the website, which will appear on screen and below in the description tag now, and buy an album and go and see them live. Absolutely great band. Watch their videos on YouTube. But just support them, you know, absolutely wonderful band. It's Vega, and the album is called Battle Lines, and it's out on September the 8th. And for Now Spinning Magazine, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, become a patron, become a YouTube member, visit the Now Spinning Magazine group on Facebook, join us on Twitter, on Instagram, even on LinkedIn. But please join and listen to the podcast as well. We've got lots of new guests coming up and some really exciting ones as well. So take care, everybody. Remember, music is the healer and the doctor. And I shall see you all very, very soon.